Boy, I've got some amazing quotes from Christian leaders and others about the restoration of the Jewish people to their land and latest from the Middle East and your Jewish-related questions. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Isn't it fascinating how so many secular American leaders claim to know what Islam is really about? John Kerry is going to tell us about the real face of Islam. President Carter is going to tell us about the principles of Allah. I remember during America's war with Afghanistan, during the presidency of George W. Bush, that he explained what real Islam was, and the Taliban in Afghanistan said, oh, he's going to teach us what the Quran says. Interesting, isn't it? Some fascinating quotes from Vice President Joe Biden as well. A lot to cover, some serious updates about the Middle East, and as always, your Jewish calls. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Now, here's the number to call if you have a Jewish-related question, relates to Israel, relates to the Hebrew language, or Old Testament, or Messianic prophecy, or Jewish tradition, anything like that. I'm delighted to take your calls. And if you have a very different view than I do about the Mideast conflict, give us a call. 866-348-7884. That's a weird thing happened on Twitter. Somehow, somebody starts including me in some conversations on Twitter having to do with Islam, Syria, ISIS, Hamas, and then language that Jesus spoke. Now, that's all natural in terms of interacting with me, but these are people I have no idea who they are. And at least some in America and some in the Middle East. And then some gal posts something. She said her father was a pastor. Again, I have no idea who she is. I ended up blocking her because she just got nasty. And she said when Jesus prayed to his father, he said, Allah. And I said, no, they are related words. In other words, if Allah is in fact Allah, or Allahu, Al-Ilahu, the God. So Al-Ilahu said over and over becomes Allahu. There is a double L there in the Arabic word. So the standard Islamic interpretation is that this is the God said over and over until it became Allahu instead of Al-Ilahu. Then that would have been very similar to the Hebrew or Aramaic way of pronouncing the name of God. Not identical, absolutely not identical, and without the double L. So they're two distinct phonemes, but related, because the Semitic languages, the many of the words have common roots. I said, no, he didn't say Allah. He would have said something similar in Aramaic, but he didn't say Allah, different phonemes. So that's my PhD is in Near Eastern languages. I mean, it's like simple. This is 1 + 1 = 2. Others argue that Allah was just the name of the moon god, and there are many scholars who point to that, and that was a popular deity, hence the one that Muhammad said will follow, so as to win over the maximum number of people. In any case, I mean, blast it, as if I said Jesus didn't speak Aramaic, or I'm some idiot. It's like, what is going on out there? And these are people who are actually posting the Hebrew or the Aramaic, so I mean, they have access to this. Sometimes a little knowledge can be dangerous, no? My two new articles are up, one last night on the wicked, including ISIS, will be destroyed. It'll stir you. And then my article on convert them or kill them is Phil Robertson being just like the Islamic terrorists. Go to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest articles.
Hey,
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We will follow them to the gates of hell until they are brought to justice.
Those were the words of Vice President Joe Biden talking about ISIS, and obviously sensitive to the fact that President Obama's comments that he didn't have a strategy yet about dealing with ISIS in Syria, that that has not played well, and the feeling of American indecision has not played well for good reason. No doubt it's a very complex situation within Syria. That's one reason that ISIS has gotten stronger. But how many are there? 10,000 members of ISIS, maybe more than that now. But certainly there can be an aggressive strategy to deal with them. Perhaps Vice President Biden was trying to sound aggressive and tough. And according to the video, he looked angry. FoxNews.com says this: Mission Impossible. Biden will chase ISIS to the gates of hell. GIs in Iraq. We can't even leave the front gate of our base. 866-34-TRUTH. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I have some very edifying quotes to share with you in a moment. I want to give a few more updates regarding Israel's war with Hamas. But again, any Jewish-related questions or comments, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's just listen to the rest of what Vice President Biden had to say. And let this be a reminder to pray for our president, to pray for the administration, for a real awakening to the realities of what we're dealing with, and for wisdom, for a clear plan of action. Clip number 7.
The American people are so much stronger, so much more resolved than any enemy can fully understand. As a nation, we're united. And when people harm Americans, we don't retreat. We don't forget. We take care of those who are grieving. And when that's finished, they should know we will follow them to the gates of hell until they are brought to justice. Because hell is where they will reside. Hell is where they will reside.
Now, I want to give you some food for thought here, all right? I want to give you food for thought. ISIS has now said to Vladimir Putin, we are coming to Russia. We are coming your way. Now, you may despise Putin. You may not trust Putin. You may like him in certain ways, but realize ideologically we are far apart. But let's just say you don't think of him that well. Do you think that he will respond more decisively than America? Do you feel that if there was, say, a Russian journalist who was brutally beheaded on a video, that he would respond more aggressively than America? If so, that really tells you something, doesn't it, in terms of a certain type of leadership? Years ago, during the conflict in Lebanon, there were Russian journalists, or Russian hostages, and special forces from Russia came in to try to free them. There was hostility towards Lebanon, towards Russia, because of the stance they were taking in the Middle East. So these Muslim terrorists kidnapped a number of Russians. And when the special forces got there, they found out that one of the Russians had already been killed, and the terrorists were threatening to kill more. This was back in the 80s. So what did Russia do? Now, please hear me. Please hear me. Please don't take me out of context. I am not recommending this. I am not recommending this. I am not saying, oh, how wonderful the Russians are. I'm saying this to make a point, okay? So please hear me carefully. What happened was the special forces were able, then working with Russian intelligence, to find out who relatives of the kidnappers were, at least one of whom was in Russia. They then Russian intelligence then kidnapped the man and castrated him and sent body parts to the terrorists, and they did not kill another Russian for many years. Am I recommending America does the same? No, no, no. I'm saying that there is a certain language that the terrorists understand. And the more someone appears to be weak, the more aggressive they will get. It's one reason that Israel always has to respond forcefully. It's one reason why Israel cannot just say, well, we'll just try to, you know, just defend it, you know, so if you know, we won't fight back. No, no, no. Not only is it right that they fight back, but it is necessary that they fight back strongly. And I'm not comparing Israel's actions to Russia's either. All right. let me just play one more clip. This is Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, clip number 8. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer speaking on Fox News. It's related. Let's just listen to him.
To be effective, he's got to have a strategy. And it's not just about ISIS. It's about all of radical Islam. Right now, Libya has problems. We're going to talk about it this morning. We don't have time to get to it. The missing aircraft in Libya. There's huge issues here that go beyond ISIS. And until the president recognizes he needs a regional strategy that includes all of radical Islam, that includes our allies, we don't have a strategy.
Yeah. And at the very, very least, at the very, very least, there should be a recognition of the widespread nature of radical Islam and the degree to which it has adherence in America, in Europe. Okay, all right. One more comment. Secretary of State John Kerry, Breitbart News reporting. Scripture commands USA to protect Muslim countries against global warming. I didn't make this up. It's not April 1st. Wednesday, the ceremony to appoint Texas lawyer Shariq Zafar to be special representative to Muslim countries. Secretary of State John Kerry said it was the United States' biblical, quote, responsibility to, quote, confront climate change, including to protect, quote, vulnerable Muslim-majority countries. Kerry said Scripture, in particular the book of Genesis, made clear it is our, quote, duty to protect the planet. We should look at Muslim countries, quote, with a sense of stewardship of Earth, adding that responsibility comes from God. You got to be kidding me. With everything happening in the world today, And with all the issues going on around the world, this is a comment that's going to be made now? Even if you say, yeah, well, I think Book of Genesis does teach environmental responsibility. Okay, great, fine. No argument with that. But that, I mean, this comes the day after, this was yesterday, so it came the day after the horrific video release of the beheading of American Jewish journalist Stephen Sotloff. It comes in the midst of the ever-growing horror of ISIS needing to be confronted. It comes shortly after the aftermath of 50 days of war between Israel and Hamas. And we have a sacred duty, a biblical responsibility to protect Muslim countries against global war. Where in the world did that come from? Maybe show solidarity with, maybe help them, help moderate Muslims counter radical Islam. Whatever. By the way, one more note on that, and I'm going to be posting a link with this, a graphic about this tonight, along with a relevant article. But not that long ago, the Prime Minister of Turkey, Prime Minister Erdogan, and if I mispronounced his name, my apologies, he said that the term moderate Islam is ugly and offensive. He said there is no moderate Islam. Islam is Islam. So here's someone, a prominent Islamic leader in the Middle East and in the world, denouncing the idea that there are different aspects of Islam There's no such thing as moderate. That's an insult. Islam is Islam. 866-34-TRUTH. We come back. I want to share quotes with you from past Christian leaders and from past American black civil rights leaders speaking about Zionism and the restoration of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. Some really neat, amazing quotes that we'll share with you on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Remember, go to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest articles, so you can read my two latest articles, one posted last night, one posted today.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. 866-34-TRUTH, Michael Brown. Welcome to the broadcast. Who said this? A Christian is the last person who ought to ever speak disrespectfully or unkindly of the Jews. Remember that our Lord belonged to that race and that his first apostles were also of that nation, and we regard that ancient people as the very aristocracy of mankind, tracing back their pedigree to those before whom the mightiest kings might well veil their faces and bow in lowliest homage. Who said this? Same person, same quote. Let us pray to God continually for the ingathering of the Jews. They are the original branches of the good olive tree, although for a time they have been cut off because of unbelief. And we who are only wild olive roots have been grafted into their places. Shall we boast and exalt ourselves over them? No. And he goes on. Who was that? That was Charles Spurgeon. That was Charles Spurgeon, who spoke emphatically. And clearly, we'll share some of his other quotes later, about the return of the Jewish people to the physical land of Israel in conjunction with their faith in Messiah. You say, well, they haven't come to faith in Messiah yet. Understood. The fact is, very clearly, he did recognize God's preservation of the Jewish people, the nation of Israel. He did recognize the promise that there would be a massive turning of the Jewish people to the Messiah. And he also clearly said that they would be physically returned to the land. Bishop J.C. Ryle, another great British Christian leader from the 1800s, quoted, "It's high time for Christians to interpret unfulfilled prophecy by the light of prophecies already fulfilled. The curses of the Jews were brought to pass literally, so also will be the blessings. The scattering was literal, so also will be the gathering. The pulling down of Zion was literal, so also will be the building up. The rejection of Israel was literal, so also will be the restoration." Let me give you one more quote, and then we'll get to the phones. This is an article I alluded to yesterday by Dr. Harold Brackman, written for the Simon Wiesenthal Center and Museum of Tolerance, January, February of 2010, called "Jews, African Americans, and Israel, the Ties That Bind." The founder of the NAACP was W.E.B. Du Bois, 1868 to 1963, so he lived to be 95 years old. Listen to what he said. "The African movement must mean to us what the Zionist movement must mean to the Jews, the centralization of race effort and the recognition of a racial front. To help bear the burden of Africa does not mean any lessening of effort in our problems at home. For any ebullition of effort and feeling that results in amelioration of the lot of Africa tends to ameliorate the conditions of colored peoples throughout the world." So he's saying that we stand together with the people of Africa, that does not lessen. As an African American, stand with the Africans, that does not lessen our working for our own nation. And if we don't help the Africans, we're hurting people of color around the world. And he said that's a parallel to the Zionist movement. Fascinating. Dr. Martin Luther King, I see Israel, and never mind saying it, is one of the great outposts of democracy in the world, and a marvelous example of what can be done, how desert land can almost be transformed into an oasis of brotherhood and democracy. Peace for Israel means security, and that security must be a reality. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones. Washington, D.C. HP, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, hello there. Lord bless you.
Thank you.
How could you and I support and bless Israel when they slaughtered 2,100 Palestinians over the last month, including 450 children, reported by UNICEF?
What do you mean? Hang on. What do you mean slaughter? A thousand of them were terrorists. So half of them were terrorists.
Terrorists?
Yeah. Half of them were terrorists. Correct. That's fairly well documented.
450 children?
Yeah, because of the terrorists. Because the terrorists. Well, let me ask you, HP. Would you have been against America in World War II? When America was fighting the Japanese and the Nazis, would you have been anti-American and said we can't support America?
No.
You would have been pro-America?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know how many citizens, how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of citizens were killed or wounded in World War II?
No, I don't know. I got to go. I'm sorry.
Well, that call will live on in infamy. Poor HP. Wow. Yeah, that is a first, Matt. Poor HP. Hey, listen, let me just say this. I'm happy to have folks come on the air that differ with me. I'm happy to have folks come on the air who want to challenge me. Can I just give you a word of advice? At least have your gun loaded, so to say, okay, to use a figure of speech. If you're going to be shooting at a target, and the target you're going to challenge the truthfulness of what I'm saying, then at least be ready. At least be ready. If you just want to ask questions, then you don't have to be as ready. Wow. Here's what is so interesting, and here's the lesson learned. Propaganda has its effect. Propaganda has its effect. To every American who said we must support our troops in Iraq as we fight against Saddam Hussein, to every American who said we must stand with our troops in Afghanistan as we combat the Taliban, let's give you a little scenario here. Let's say you're in Afghanistan. Let's say Taliban are firing at you, and to protect your own people or to protect the Americans there or the innocent civilians in surrounding villages, Taliban are attacking. You must attack back. That's the only thing. You must attack back. So you shoot at their positions or you bomb their positions. It could well be that unintentionally civilians will be hurt or killed. If you don't stop the terrorists, though, a whole lot more people, innocent, will be killed. Nobody does a better job of a major army. Nobody does a better job of minimizing civilian casualties than Israel. It's a fact. Study it out. Let me encourage you again to visit the website, AskDrBrown.org. We've got a really neat resource offer where you can get one of the most practical, life-changing books I've ever written that will help you walk in holiness and purity and overcome sin. And when you get the book, you will also get an absolutely free download with it, a $20 audio download. So go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. And when you go there, just look right on the homepage. You'll see the special resource offer. Remember to check out the latest articles.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Does that sound like classic symphony music from the Renaissance? No. Does that sound like heavy metal music by some grunge rock? No. Does that sound like hip-hop rap? No, that sounds like music from the Middle East, which means it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And if you've got Jewish-related questions, Israel-related questions, 866-34-TRUTH. Now, look, I understand. I understand that not all of you are free to call me at this time with your questions, with your comments. And Matt, do me a favor. Just post the number where we can people can call and leave a message, or our hotline number. We do have a number. We've barely released it. Almost, I don't know if I've ever given it out on the air. But we do have a number where you can call. And you'll have up to 3 minutes if you have a testimony that relates to this ministry that you want to share. It's not for asking questions. As soon as we announced it, we put in bold, it's not for asking questions. It's not for asking questions. And, of course, all the calls that came in immediately after, or the calls that came in, were asking questions. But if you want to differ with me, if you want to give me a piece of your mind, if you use profanity and all that, won't be used. But if you want to give me a piece of your mind, if you have a testimony, we'll give you a number in a little while, and you can call after hours. The only thing is, we will not, if you leave your full name or anything, we will not use that on the air, but we may decide, hey, we want to air that, okay? So there's an opportunity to do it, but don't challenge me to a debate on Twitter. Number one, you have only 140 characters at a time. Number two, you have, our following on Facebook is massively bigger than our following on Twitter. We can reach as many as 8.5 million people in a week on Facebook and have hundreds and hundreds of thousands engaged. But still, even on Twitter, I've got, 10,000 and something followers there, which is not large compared to others, but it's just you obviously can't deal with everybody, respond to everybody. Plus, if I'm doing radio, you're not being macho by challenging me on Facebook. Well, how come you're not responding? What, are you afraid? I got called a coward the other day on Twitter. I see some posts hours later. I'm a coward. It's like, God, what are you talking about? So if you've got something you'd like to say, if you'd like to point out, well, you read that Spurgeon quote and you said homage. It should have been homage. Go ahead, lay into me. Have at it. Or share a neat testimony that others will be encouraged by. So you've got a few minutes to do it. So this is not to get on the air now. But if off the air, maybe you're listening on podcast and maybe it's midnight right now, or maybe you're listening on a Saturday, or you're hearing this on American Family Radio on a Sunday, and you say, well, I just want to say something. I want to thank Dr. Brown, or I want to blast Dr. Brown. Go ahead. Here's the number to call, 704-498-4688. Remember, if you use profanity, won't use it. We're not going to take the time to be bleeping everything out. But you can speak quite freely, and you can edify, or you can challenge. And again, we will never use your whole name. If you lose it, it is not for leaving questions, because we will not get back to you with answers to the questions. And in addition, again, as I said a moment ago, we might just play what you leave on the air if it's worthy of the air. But here's the number, 704-498-4688. Leave it one more time, 704-498-4688. Even if you're listening now, but you say, you know, I'm just afraid to call on the air, or I get nervous, or, you know, you may have a break that comes up, or you may want to jump in, and I'd just like to speak freely for 2 or 3 minutes. Well, here is your outlet and the way to do it. Once more, 704-498-4688. We come back, I'm going to look more at what Charles Spurgeon had to say about the restoration of the Jewish people to the land. I talked about this months and months back. I think it's time that we revisit it.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yep. Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Welcome back to the Line of Fire. You know, before I get to some of the Spurgeon quotes, and remember, this is your time to call in with Jewish-related comments, questions, and I will get to some calls. 866-348-7884. Even if you've been reading the Bible and there's an Old Testament verse and the translations are contradictory and you're wondering about it, Hebrew question, very happy to answer you. I just want to mention a couple of other things with regard to summing up this stage of the conflict between Israel and Hamas. Do you know that when Israel abandoned Gaza and they uprooted thousands of their people who'd been living there for years, there were, 3,000 greenhouses? American Jews helped raise $14 million to pay for those greenhouses and donate them to the Palestinians so that they could have some good, viable means of income. What happened to them? They were vandalized, trashed, and destroyed. This is back in 2005. Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority has been very critical of Hamas leadership. And he has said, why did you do what you did? The agreement that you signed with Israel is the agreement that Egypt offered early on. It was the agreement that you refused back then. This is Palestinian Authority leader of Fatah, Mahmoud Abbas, chastising leadership of Hamas, not for accepting the peace proposal, which is holding still, that Egypt brokered, but for not accepting it weeks earlier. And Mahmoud Abbas is saying, why? Why put the people through so much suffering? Look at everything you have lost. You know, it's almost like this. You're in a fist fight with someone, and it's clear that this person is a much better fighter than you. And they punch you in the eye, give you a black eye, and say, hey, look, we don't have to fight. If you quit fighting, I won't fight back, and we can just be neighbors. No, 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 no. I'm not going to give up until I beat you up. All right. Well, then the fight goes on, and the better fighter ends up all but knocking out the other person. They're laying on the ground, a bloody mess. And they say, okay, we'll just be neighbors. Well, you could have done that early on. Could have saved yourself a whole lot of pain and grief. So that is a very valid criticism that has been made. And political leadership of Hamas outside of Gaza has been critical for some other reasons as well. There's also an update by Prime Minister Netanyahu where he sums things up. And he explains why they took the stands that they took and why they agreed to the ceasefire, because he came under a lot of flack for it. And people are saying, why did you do that? It was the wrong thing to do, and we didn't completely wipe them out. And what he said is, look, we have so decimated their terror abilities. We have found, discovered, and wiped out the tunnels. We have pushed them back years and years and years and years. We have decimated some of their senior leadership. And if they try to fight again, we are in a much stronger position to stop them. Now, those living in the South said we still don't have safety. And there are concerns that Hamas, as soon as it's ready, will strike again. Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying, listen, we came out ahead with the ceasefire. They were absolutely decimated, and if they try to attack again, you better believe we're going to come after them. And when you look at it in that respect, it does make a lot more sense. Okay, Charles Spurgeon, are you ready for the, you know what? I wanted to read from another page, but let me start here. This is an article on the website controversyofzion.com back in September of 2011. September of 2011, and the author of the article, Dalton Lifsey, is addressing those who believe in replacement theology or supersessionism, the idea that the church has been superseded Israel, or territorial supersessionism, that the land no longer belongs to Israel. And Dr. Barry Horner said this, while some authors renounce association with these definitions and even attempt to disavow their validity, nevertheless, all of their verbal ducking and weaving concerning denial on the one hand cannot obscure identification on the other hand with the same essential anti-Judaic spirit which substitutes concepts such as progression, transference, and fulfillment in, which substitute concepts such as progression, transference, and fulfillment in reality convey. In other words, you say, no, I don't hold to replacement theology. I hold to fulfillment theology. And if you are listening and you do not believe that the physical land of Israel in any way belongs to the Jewish people today, if you do not believe that the physical land of Israel is promised by God to the Jewish people, if you don't believe that, please call and tell us why. I'm open to discuss that with you. 866-34-TRUTH. But what Dr. Barry Horner is rightly saying is that you can say, I don't believe in this, I believe in fulfillment theology, or I believe in progression or transference of promises, or all the promises to Israel fulfilled in Jesus the Jew, and when the Jews are in Jesus, then they have the promises. The end result still comes out the same. It still comes out the same, that the promises given to national Israel do not hold, and the promises, the unconditional land promises that were given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob don't hold. So listen to what some theologians have said. Dr. Stephen Sizer, whom we have strongly corrected and rebuked on this broadcast and in writing, he says, there is therefore no evidence that the apostles believed that the Jewish people still had a divine right to the land, or that Jewish possession of the land would be important, let alone that Jerusalem would remain a central aspect of God's purposes for the world. On the contrary, Jerusalem, as much as land, has now been superseded. They have been made irrelevant to God's redemptive purposes. What an absolutely wrong statement by Dr. Sizer. Absolutely, categorically wrong. First, the Jewish apostles were living in Israel with Jesus, Yeshua, the Messiah. The issue was not going to be brought up, do we have a right to be here? That was their land. And of course, they would have been praying for the regathering of exiles. That would have been a common concept or something biblical that Jews would have been praying for and certainly standardized over the centuries in the prayer book. But to say that the promises are irrelevant to God's redemptive purposes, well, where do the Jewish people live? And where does it ever say that the unconditional promises that God made to Abraham are now thrown out and tossed? Didn't Paul say in Galatians 3 that the law, which came 430 years after the law, cannot annul the promise? Excuse me, the law that came 430 years after the promise cannot annul that promise. Now, with regard to another statement, there's no evidence that the apostles believed that the Jewish people still had a divine right to the land, that Jewish possession of the land would be important. Why, pray tell, did the disciples, the apostles, right before Jesus ascended in Acts, the first chapter, why, pray tell, did they say, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom to Israel? And Jesus didn't say, you fools, you idiots, you nincompoops, how long have I been with you? How could you be so spiritually dull? Don't you know the church is Israel? No, he said, paraphrase, good question, just not for you to know now. You're not to know the times when that's going to happen. You just focus on being witnesses. So why were they talking about restoring the kingdom to Israel? And was going to be Israel based in Tokyo, Japan? Was it going to be Israel based in Moscow, Russia? Israel based in Tulsa, Oklahoma? New Testament scholar Gary Burge, Christ is the reality behind all earthbound promises Land is rejected. Land is spiritualized as something else. These are excerpts of quotes. The promise is historicized in Jesus, a man who lives in the land. Whatever the land meant in the Old Testament, whatever the promise contained, this now belongs to Christians. The land was a metaphor, a symbol of a greater place beyond the soil of Canaan. Yikes. Yikes. So the land basically means Jesus. Somehow Jesus is the land. And where do Jews live? Oh, nothing to even think about or worry about. It's just spiritual. It's just spiritual. So what do you tell all the Americans living in America? No, no, it's not. It's just spiritual. The land stuff is just spiritual. You see how destructive this is when it comes to the lives of Jewish people living in the land who would gladly live at peace with their Palestinian neighbors? We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I want to play, you know, let me just play one more clip. It's going to be clip number 21. Family spokesman for Stephen Sotloff, who was murdered in cold blood by Islamic terrorists. You know, the horror of it is such, and then you have to think, okay, we're seeing that, but it's been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, that have been butchered by ISIS in similar ways, reminding us of the horrific nature of evil. Please read my latest two articles. You'll find them both very, very relevant. The wicked, including ISIS, will be destroyed. And when Phil Robertson said, convert them or kill them, was he being just like ISIS? By the way, the answer is a great big no when you read his comments in proper context. But it is so important that we don't get insensitive, because the more you see the horror, you can get grieved and grieved, and you get to that point where you almost become dulled and insensitive. So just important to be reminded about the humanity of these people. We can better relate to an American sometimes because we're Americans and we see pictures of hundreds of others in another country. It's devastating, but it doesn't have the same impact. Well, somehow we need to pray for that level of sensitivity, because these are fellow human beings being slaughtered. Clip number 21.
He yearned for a tranquil life where he could enjoy Miami Dolphins games on Sunday and a banal job, office job on Monday that would provide him a comfortable middle-class existence. But the Arab world pulled him. He was no war junkie. He did not want to be a modern-day Lawrence of Arabia. He merely wanted to give voice to those who had none.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is that in speaking in Arabic, they challenge the head of ISIS to a debate about the Quran. All right, June 3rd, 1855, New Park Street. This is a New Park Street chapel southward. This is Charles Spurgeon, and he's speaking about the return of the Jewish people to the land. Quote, the hour is approaching when the tribes shall go on to go up to their own country, when Judea, so long a howling wilderness, shall once more blossom like the rose, when, if the temple itself be not restored yet, on Zion's hill shall be raised some Christian building where the chants of solemn praise shall be heard as erst of the old Psalms of David were sung in the tabernacle. I think, Spurgeon said, we do not attach sufficient importance to the restoration of the Jews. We do not think enough about it, but certainly, if there is anything promised in the Bible, it is this. I imagine that you cannot read the Bible without seeing clearly that there is to be an actual restoration of the children of Israel. And then he said, for when the Jews are restored, the fullness of the Gentiles shall be gathered in. And as soon as they return, then Jesus will come upon Mount Zion with his ancients gloriously. And the halcyon days of the millennium shall then dawn. We shall then know every man to be a brother and a friend. Christ shall rule with universal sway. December 6, 1863, at the Metropolitan Tabernacle in Newington. But the day is coming, this is Spurgeon. Yet dawns already when the whole world shall discern the true dignity of the chosen seed and shall seek their company, because the Lord hath blessed them. And that day when Israel shall look upon him whom they have pierced and shall mourn for their sins, the Jew shall take his true rank among the nations as an elder brother and a prince. The covenant made with Abraham to bless all nations by his seed is not revoked. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but the chosen nation shall not be blotted out from the book of remembrance. The Lord hath not cast away his people. He has never given their mother a bill of divorcement. He has never put them away. In little wrath he has hidden his face from them, but with great mercies will he gather them. The natural branches shall again be grafted into the olive together with the wild olive graftings from among the Gentiles. And the Jew, first and chiefly, shall grace triumph through the King of the Jews. O time, fly thou with rapid wing and bring the auspicious day. You know what's so remarkable about that quote? Not just the richness of it, but the fact that Spurgeon had relatively few notes that he used when preaching, and as he said, had many ideas simultaneously running through his head as he spoke. So this was just the grace of God on him as an orator and the anointing of God on his life to speak with this extraordinary eloquence. You might say, well, I want to challenge him. I don't care if it's Charles Spurgeon. I want to challenge him. Spurgeon said, the Lord hath not cast away his people. He has never given their mother a bill of divorce. He's never put them away. You say, no. I mean, he did. He clearly divorced them like Hosea. He clearly divorced them in Jeremiah. What Spurgeon means is there was no lasting rejection. That's what happened. When God put them away, it was only to restore them and bring them back to himself. You say, but I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that. Israel hasn't earned that. Correct. Is God allowed to deal with Israel based on grace? Or is he only allowed to deal with the church based on grace? Didn't he say when he chose the Jewish people, when he chose the people of Israel in the Old Testament? Didn't God say it's not because of anything you've done? It's not because you're better, bigger, stronger than others? Isn't it what Paul writes in Romans 11, that the reason God keeps his promises is because of his love for the patriarchs? And when he gives a promise, he gives a promise. His promise to Israel is not based on performance. You say, but he judged them based on performance. Yes, correct. There has been serious judgment, 100% without question. However, he has still made a promise. And he said, I will discipline you, but I won't wipe you out. May I encourage you to go to our website? We are very soon going to launch an amazing new, completely, massively revamped Real Messiah website that is also going to be terrific for religious Jews and seekers, with a ton of new material, many, many new videos we've recorded. Can't tell you how many hours of material that we'll be posting that's never been seen before. We are doing a whole lot, and we are right on the precipice of major outreach in Israel via internet. So many things going on. May I invite you to partner with us? May I invite you to be part of our team, standing together? If you want to make a one-time donation, those are always welcome, and so many of you have done that over the years. Thank you. If you want to become a torchbearer, a monthly supporter, put aside a dollar or more per day, and then $30 or more per month. My thank you gift, in fact, I've got a stack to sign today. My thank you gift will be the Tree of Life version of the Bible, the first team translation by Messianic Jewish scholars. This is the very first edition that's being made public. We'll send that out as a thank you, and then other perks and things we send your way every week. So to do that, go to AskDrBrown.org and just click on Donate. My bottom line today: Charles Spurgeon was absolutely right. God never rescinded the promise to Abraham that through his seed the world will be blessed, and that will continue through the people of Israel. Boy, I've got some amazing quotes from Christian leaders and others about the restoration of the Jewish people to their land, and latest from the Middle East and your Jewish-related questions. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I got a nice little surprise for you here. We've got a whole lot to talk about, some audio clips we want to play for you, some quotes we want to share with you. And as always on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we want to take your phone calls, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Hebrew questions, Jewish roots questions, Messianic prophecy questions, Old Testament questions, modern Israel, war with Gaza, even some Islamic questions. I'm not an Islamic specialist. 3 years of classical Arabic and studied classical Arabic together with Muslims in grad school. But hopefully I can answer a good number of your questions. 866-34-TRUTH. But before we do any of that, it's nice to have a thoroughly Jewish colleague down the hallway. And he has a major article that's going to be coming out in Dr. Billy Graham's Decision magazine. And the article is called Praying God's Heart: How Believers Can Intercede for Both Israel and Arab Nations. It's my friend and colleague, Scott Volk, who received, I think several votes to host the show.
One from my mother.
Yeah, when I'm traveling overseas. But Scott, the article talks about how believers can intercede for both Israel and Arab nations. What gives you the right to write that article?
Well, the amazing thing about me, and I didn't think about this 26 years ago when I proposed
wife. Everybody listening, just Scott's opening words, the amazing thing about me.
Oh.
Those are his opening.
Thanks for catching that, bro.
He's actually a very humble guy. We have been correcting typos in each other's letters for years. In fact, he'll write me. I'll write him like a 2-page email, or he'll write me. And if we find one letter spelled wrong, one word spelled wrong, we'll just write back, say with the letter T. Or the letter E, and you have to read the whole thing to discover that. So just my joy.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Well, amazingly, when I proposed to my wife-to-be probably 27 or 28 years ago, I didn't propose to her thinking that I was a full-blooded Jew and she was a full-blooded Arab and we're going to have some kind of ministry together. But I do have a little bit of reason for writing this, because here we are 26 years later, celebrating our next anniversary is 27 years being married to the most amazing woman in the world. I'm a full-blooded Jew. She's a full-blooded Arab. We don't have boundaries in our homes. We can go anywhere we want. We get along great, and we love each other.
So the unity obviously is found as husband and wife. The unity is also found in Jesus. But do you feel like a tension because you're married to a woman of Lebanese Arab descent, and a majority of Arabs are Muslims, and there is Islamic hostility towards Israel? Do you feel any kind of conflict?
I don't feel a conflict where my marriage is concerned. And if anything, bro, I've just really been taken lately by the rise in the Muslim and the whole Muslim call, and even feeling like, I wonder what God has for me where that's concerned. Obviously, because I'm a Jew, I have an open door where Jewish people are concerned. But amazingly, also because my wife's Arab, it's also opened up doors in the Christian Arab community in the Middle East.
And are you actively involved in acts of reconciliation?
That is really what my heart is. I feel like God has blessed me to be a bridge builder with the Arab and the Jewish believing community, and with Arab and Jew. And, my wife had an aunt who just did not like me from the day we got married because I was a Jewish person. And it was such a blessing that I ended up turning into her favorite nephew-in-law.
Are you serious?
Oh, I'm serious. I'm serious. I have a heart. Look, if Ishmael and Isaac, it's amazing to me that Abraham.
We'll stop right here, and we'll come back. Ishmael, Isaac, something amazing having to do with Abraham. By the way, I just posted, quote I read last hour, an amazing quote from Spurgeon. I just posted it on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, AskDr Brown. Check it out. Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and I will have time to take your Thoroughly Jewish calls at 866-34-TRUTH. I do want to mention, though, that my colleague Scott Volk just walked into our offices moments ago. His office is down the hallway from our studio in my office. We've been colleagues and friends for over 20 years now. And when my hair was dark and when Scott had hair, Scott was the lead pastor of our congregation for years. And then God supernaturally, it's the only way to describe it, supernaturally moved him out, still heavily involved in our home congregation, but moved him out to focus on Israel, to focus on blessing Israel, helping Jewish people in need, helping Arabs in need in the land. And Scott, your website that everyone can go to?
www.togetherforisrael.org.
All right, togetherforisrael.org. And you also launched a Facebook page called 1 Minute for Israel.
Remarkable, bro. Remarkable. I launched that page July 17th. And it's just simply a Facebook community that commits to praying 1 minute a day for the peace of Jerusalem. I launched it July 17th. We have over 14,000 followers.
Serious?
Serious. Today, I mean, you can look today. I think our feed today has been shared already hundreds of times. And the remarkable thing is that people are catching on to this. It's almost
just
like
pray this, 1 minute.
1 minute a day. What I'll do is I'll post a scripture and maybe two or three supporting scriptures and thoughts, and encourage people to pray. And people are catching on to this. It's remarkable.
Praise God. Wonderful. Neat. Remember, togetherforisrael.org. Before we talk about the amazing thing you're going to mention with Isaac, with Ishmael, with Abraham, and Scott has an article that'll be coming out in the next edition of Billy Graham's Decision magazine. When you just had an interesting story from your dad in Australia.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I don't even know the name of the person, but you may be listening right now. My mom and dad are in Australia and in New Zealand, and somebody walked up to my dad and asked my father if he knew Scott Volk. Obviously, he knew my dad's last name was Volk. So my dad said, "That's my son." And this guy goes, "Your son? That's amazing." And the reason why he knew who I was because he religiously listens to The Line of Fire.
Isn't that awesome?
So, bro, you're helping me become known by more than just two or three people.
Now, the funny thing is, whenever we traveled for years, everybody knew Scott. Wherever we went, everybody knew Scott. But they knew you as Shelley and June's son. And
Correct.
Now folks are knowing your parents as Scott's parents.
It's awesome.
So there
That's
you go.
Awesome.
All right. Something amazing about Abraham, Ishmael, Isaac.
Yeah. As I was reading through Genesis, I think last year as I was reading through the word, it struck me that when Abraham was buried, it said that Isaac and Ishmael together buried their father. And as I was reading through this year, I mean, it's just really a remarkable thing. There wasn't this enmity that was always there. I think in the spirit, there's been some kind of enmity that God is going to, in the last days, bring Isaac and Ishmael back together, really as a sign of his peace. But also, the other remarkable thing is there are very few people in the Bible who were pre-named by the Lord himself.
So in other words, there's a prophetic word, you're going to have a son, and you're to name the son this.
Exactly.
Like,
I mean, how many are there, bro?
It's a handful.
A handful.
Right.
And two of them are Isaac and Ishmael. And God made promises to the both of them. And I think it's really easy for believers today to write off Ishmael or even use Ishmael in such a derogatory way as saying you've birthed an Ishmael, as if Ishmael is simply and always a mistake, when in fact God has a plan for Ishmael and Isaac together.
You know, a caller yesterday was talking to me. We were talking about overcoming social injustice, and let's have a conversation. Let's keep talking about blind spots we may have. And the caller said, look, when you use the term victim mentality, it can be negative for someone. When I say don't have a victim mentality, so let's say you're talking about Black Americans and in many parts of the country still, the obstacles they have to overcome that a white American may not have to, or injustice, or racial profiling, or unfair court verdicts, things like that. And then the history is still a relatively recent history, and suggested not using the term victim mentality. And I said, well, I use it so widely. I mean, I talk about in the church, the body, don't have a victim mentality. You will be hurt. You will, you know, but you can't think like that. But still, terminology does matter.
Absolutely.
And I've been thinking about that. One of my friends, a counter-missionary, always refers to himself as a Pharisee, because to him, Pharisee is a good thing.
Right.
And in his mind, the New Testament rebukes of the hypocritical Pharisees have now been applied to all Pharisees. So what's a synonym for hypocrite? You mean a real Pharisee. So that is interesting how negative in our minds the name Ishmael can be.
Exactly. And put yourself in a position of a God-fearing Arab brother, a son of Ishmael, when you hear the term, don't be guilty of birthing an Ishmael. I just think we can be really desensitized, and once we become aware of these things, we can build bridges rather than build gaps between Arab and Jew. Obviously, the God's promise to Isaac is a promise that comes through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob for the people of Israel. It's an entirely different promise for Ishmael. Nonetheless, God's got a purpose for Ishmael in the earth. And it's amazing when you read stories about how these Muslims are being awakened in the middle of the night with these incredible visitations from the Lord himself.
Yeah, it is. It is remarkable. The hostilities are there. There are obviously massive differences to overcome. But there are actually promises in the Bible, though, to Arab countries, some of which are basically completely or almost completely, very largely Muslim countries. Can you give me an example, maybe of one? Let's say Isaiah 19, because there are obviously several things potentially. But Isaiah 19, this amazing prophecy, and what does it say there? That it speaks of Egypt. And it speaks of Assyria.
Yeah.
So modern-day Assyria would be Iraq.
Right.
And how there will be a national turnings mm-hmm. there as well, and that they'll all be worshiping Yahweh together.
Amazing.
And that Israel will be the third part.
Amazing.
So I mean, it's and remember, this is a 7th century prophet speaking this, or 8th century prophet
Amazing.
Speaking it. When Assyria was the great enemy.
Yeah.
And Egypt had been the past great enemy.
Yeah. How incredible would it be to Israel, and what a provocation to jealousy, when Israel is shown love for no real reason by their Arab brothers, who now that they're saved and walking with the Lord have a God-given burden for Israel's salvation. I think it seems impossible in the natural, but God's doing these kinds of things.
So you're saying that's a way that God can provoke Israel to jealousy by Arabs, former Muslims in particular, some of whom, like, say, a Walid Shubat, were terribly hostile to
right.
Israel and terrorist desires and inclinations. They get saved and they become friends of Israel.
Amazing, that's right.
It does something.
It does something, and it's not beyond God to use Ishmael actually to be a provocation to Isaac where Yeshua is concerned.
All right, we've just got a couple of minutes. Practical pointers, you lay them out in your article that's going to be coming out in Decision Magazine. What would be some practical pointers for, you know, how do we pray?
Well, I think the first practical pointer is we have to know how God feels about Ishmael and how God feels about Isaac, the promises that are made to them, how God feels about him, about them. Has God written off Ishmael forever? Does God have a purpose for them? How about this one? We must rid ourselves of any inkling of prejudice and look at each group as the Lord looks at them. There's a bunch of prejudice where Israel's concerned. There's anti-Semitism in the church. There's anti-Semitism among Arabs. What if we get God's heart for Israel? What if we get God's heart for Ishmael? Wouldn't our prayers be different?
There can be exaggerated. Not only do we have an issue with radical Islam,
right?
But hey, the whole Middle Eastern Arab way of life and culture can seem different to us, and we can demonize everybody.
That's right.
So get a pure heart, ask for God's heart.
Right. And then also, let's be biblical. Let's pray for the things that the Bible tells us to pray about. God says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Some people tell me they don't pray because they don't have a burden. And what I tell them is, I think you don't have a burden because you don't pray. Let's not be moved to pray about those things only that we're burdened for. How about praying biblical prayers and watch God open up our heart to receive the burdens that he has for both Ishmael and for Isaac?
Got it. Anything else?
That's about it. I would encourage everybody to go to the 1 Minute for Israel Facebook page, like it, pray with us, tell your friends, And also tell everybody to listen to The Line of Fire because it's the greatest radio program on earth.
Well, thanks. And that's quite a change from starting off by saying how amazing you were.
I didn't want to get rebuked twice.
How amazing the broadcast is. Listen, though, in all seriousness, we have always had great responses, Scott, when you're on the air. The shows have been great. They've been a delight. We just got to chat, you know, for 15 minutes today. But God willing, a little later in the month, when I'm traveling to Singapore, we're going to throw you behind these mics.
Come on.
And Scott Volk will be a guest host on The Line of Fire.
Woo!
All right. Right back with your Thoroughly Jewish questions.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Hey, are you listening to me in Des Moines, Iowa right now or somewhere near Des Moines, Iowa? That's where I'm heading this weekend. God willing, flying up tomorrow night after radio and then Saturday, 11 to 1, a special meet and greet. I just found out it's going to be catered. It's going to be catered by a local Italian place. So, cool. You get a meal on top of it, but that's going to be 11 to 1. And then I will be speaking Sunday morning, Sunday night in Des Moines, Iowa. Sunday night is going to be focused on Can You Be Gay and Christian, and we'll have a live open Q&A after that. So if you're anywhere near Des Moines, I'm coming to see you. So this will be First Church of the Open Bible, 2200 Beaver Avenue, Des Moines. So that'll be, excuse me, meet and greet, face-to-face time, 11 to 1 Saturday with a meal. And then Sunday morning, 10 a.m., Sunday night, 6 p.m., 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to the phones. Danita in Reidsville, North Carolina. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm sitting on the side of the road because I got so excited when Scott started talking about Ishmael. We in the Christian community tend to use that name as a very derogatory comment. And what we forget is that the Word of God says that he blessed Ishmael also, and that out of him came 12 princes. And so we have to be careful not to malign a whole group of people because of what one radical sect is going to do, because the heart of God is that every person be able to be reconciled to him, that not one of us perish. And so I just want to thank you for saying that. I have to be honest and say I have not really been a big fan of the show. My husband loves your show, but today I am so excited about what is going on.
Awesome. Hey, and thanks for being so candid. Thanks for reminding us of the promise. Yes, God did bless Ishmael. And as Scott said, he's one of the few people pre-named in the Bible.
Right.
So that's a very significant thing that God goes out of his way to do that. I'm glad your husband really likes the show, but because I have great respect for the opinions of wives too, how come you haven't been so much of a fan?
Because it just seems that there's a lot of angry people that call you. And I don't know, I'm just not an angry Christian.
Uh-huh. Do you think I provoked? Do you think I provoked the anger?
I think that you provoke them to thought, and I think that usually your attempt to provoke them to think causes more of uncivil discourse. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you know, here's the challenge, and of course, Danita, you have to then call as a non-angry Christian to keep us balanced and happy. but here's the real challenge. I can do it on talk radio, because I have 2 hours a day, even though someone may be in the car for 15 minutes, I understand that. But I have 2 hours a day. If someone does call with the wrong spirit, I can't address it. I can try to be constructive. And people who listen regularly know that they will get a burden. Let's say we're dealing with homosexual issues. They'll end up with a real love for the homosexual community. If we're standing with Israel, they'll end up with a love for the Palestinians in Gaza as well. The challenge is more when I write articles and I post things on social media, the tone of what I write, I'll be as careful as possible, but then responses start pouring in, and sometimes they do get ugly and angry. And, you know, we can't monitor everything, and then on public sites where I write elsewhere. So it's really a fine line to walk. You want to stir people. You want to awaken them, but you have to do it in a constructive way. But thank you so much for the call. And tell your husband he's got some real wisdom, both with his choice of a wife and his choice of listening on the radio, okay?
Oh, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Can I go back to Charles Spurgeon? I quoted from him in the first hour. I want to give you some more quotes from Spurgeon about Israel and the Jewish people. He said, 1863, the day is coming, yet dawns already, when the whole world shall discern the true dignity of the chosen seed and shall seek their company because the Lord hath blessed them. This is 1863. And that day when Israel shall look upon him whom they have pierced and shall mourn for their sins, the Jews shall take his true rank among the nations as an elder brother and a prince. The covenant made with Abraham to bless all nations by his seed is not revoked. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but the chosen nation shall not be blotted out from the book of remembrance. The Lord hath not cast away his people. He has never given their mother a bill of divorcement. He has never put them away again. Repeats that there. And then, let's see. The restoration and conversion of the Jews, June 16th, 1864. There will be a native government again. Speaking of Israel, there will again be the form of a body politic. A state shall be incorporated and a king shall reign. Israel has now become alienated from her own land. Her sons, though they can never forget the sacred dust of Palestine, yet die at a hopeless distance from her consecrated shores. But it shall not be so forever, for her sons shall again rejoice in her. Her land shall be called Beulah, which means married, espoused, Beulah. For as young man marrieth a virgin, so shall her sons marry her. Quote, I will place you in your own land, as God's promise to them. There to have a national prosperity, which shall make them famous. Nay, so glorious that shall be that Egypt and Tyre and Greece and Rome shall all forget their glory and the greater splendor of the throne of David. If there be anything clear and plain, the literal sense and meaning of this passage, Ezekiel 37, a meaning not to be spirited or spiritualized away, must be evident. That both the two and the 10 tribes of Israel are to be restored to their own land, and that a king is to rule over them. Now, the only thing that Spurgeon did not see is that there would be a physical restoration of the Jewish people to the land, which would begin this prophetic fulfillment, and then will culminate in the Jewish embrace of Jesus, Yeshua, the Messiah, and the full establishment of the glorious kingdom on the earth of which Spurgeon spoke, but utterly remarkable. Maybe I'll share one more Spurgeon quote with you before we're done, and a couple other interesting quotes. If you've got a Jewish-related question, I will get to some calls, 866-34-TRUTH, and some fascinating news tying in with an Islamic post that we put up on Facebook. Check out my two latest articles, The Wicked Will Be Destroyed, Including ISIS, and Phil Robertson said, convert them or kill them. Was he being just like ISIS? Go to AskDrBrown.org. If you appreciate, and click on latest articles. If you appreciate the new articles every week, if you appreciate 2 hours of live radio every day, 5 days a week, if you appreciate the new videos that we put up, if you appreciate the thousands of hours of free resources on our website, we're able to do it because people like you help us. We're able to do it because of your prayers, because of your encouragement, because of your one-time gifts, and because of your monthly support. A shout-out of appreciation to all of our monthly supporters and those who help us in so many ways. To join the team, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the line of fire. Michael Brown, welcome to this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. That's what that Middle Eastern music reminds you about. So, BBC News yesterday, UK anti-Semitic incidents peaked in July, Jewish charity says. Charity set up to protect Britain's Jewish community has recorded its highest ever monthly total of anti-Semitic incidents. The Community Security Trust, CST, said it was aware of 302 such events in July compared to 59 in July 2013. It described the cases as reactions to this summer's conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. A third of July's incidents involved language or imagery relating to the Holocaust. The charity has also recorded about 150 anti-Semitic incidents in August, making it the third highest monthly total on record. The Hitler hashtag was used, social media events where some abusers used the hashtag Hitler was right. This is no surprise whatsoever. And you say, yeah, but it just ties in. It just ties in with the fact that Israel was at war in Gaza. And the media was reporting all of the terrible things that were happening to the Palestinians, and Israel was being blamed for it as if they were committing genocide. Yeah, I understand. I understand fully. Fully understand that. The point I'm making is this, and this is what this report reveals. It is under the surface, ready to explode in many parts of the world. Here, let me put something out to you. What if there was a massive economic collapse around the world? The whole world was hit by a massive economic collapse. And propagandists were able to say the Jews are to blame. Israel is to blame. And look at all the Jews who are people of influence in the financial world. And look at evil Israel, and they export this and this and this, and they're little, but oh, they are powerful, and on and on. And now people are having a hard time putting food on their tables. And now you got to blame somebody. I mean, it's the human mentality. Got to blame somebody. Now Israel gets scapegoated. You could easily see world hostility to Israel, which would then translate out to Jew hatred. You would see it explode around the world. And even if you focused it all on Israel, the hatred of Jews nationally would be, and internationally, would be no less intense. The scapegoating of Israel, lies about the Jews, this is part of history for millennia. Don't expect it to go away. The recent events, as Israel goes to war with Hamas, they indicate to us it's not just radical Muslims who cloak their anti-Jewish sentiments and anti-Zionism, although they probably hardly cloak those. But throughout much of the Muslim world, there is a hostility towards Israel and the Jews that is ready to explode given the right circumstances. But you have to remember, it was absolutely not just Muslims attacking Israel over the war with Hamas and criticizing them and even bashing Jews. There were plenty of professing Christians and plenty with no religious background. Anti-Semitism is not something that the parts of the Muslim world have a monopoly on, sad to say. How do we overcome hatred with love and with truth? All right, Chuck, I want to talk to you when we come back. You've got an interesting issue to discuss. We'll be right back here on the Line of Fire.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In a few minutes, I want to tell you about a very interesting story. Anti-Islamic posts on officials' Facebook page bring rebuke. It's a post that actually Facebook removed from our Facebook site and then apologized and reinstated if it had reached about 5 million people, a graphic that was specially designed for our Facebook page. So I'll tell you about that in a moment. Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, your Thoroughly Jewish questions, comments are more than welcome. Let's go to Louisville, North Carolina. Chuck, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. I have been burdened with Israel ever since I've been a Christian in 1971. I keep praying every night for Benjamin Netanyahu and all the leaders in the past, and especially now with Benjamin Netanyahu being pushed around by his own government because he won't go in and destroy Hamas thoroughly. And I cannot, for the life of me, pray for what I call the monstrous activities of Hamas, Hezbollah, and ISIL, and especially when I hear Christians and churches pushing around Israel, saying they are, I'm not going to take up all your time repeating what you just said, around the world, belittling the Jew because of defending their own territory, defending their own lives with money from our own government that's going to dry up for the Iron Dome and all the other things. And I get convicted, but every time I get convicted, I hear some idiotic Christians speak up against Israel again, and it just inflames me and even more to pray.
Yeah. So, Chuck, first, I do appreciate your faithful prayer for Israel now, 43 years. I got saved in 71 as well, and obviously, it's something very supernatural God's done in your heart and life, and that's wonderful to hear and humbling to hear how faithful you've been to that burden. And I appreciate your candor and your honesty. So let's think about a couple of things that might help you be able to pray for the Muslim world. You can absolutely pray for justice. You can pray for justice to come against terrorism and things like that, and pray for God's kingdom to come and God's will to be done. But let me ask you something, Chuck. When God saved you, was it based on your good works and being a good person, or was it purely His mercy?
It was His mercy, Dr. Brown. From being
absolutely
a child and being tormented with sexual abuse, I stuttered and I wet my bed until I was 17, and I was supernaturally delivered from that. Once I was saved on that day in November 1971.
Amazing.
And I have been able to look back on that and realize that God was going to use me in a different way. And I have been ridiculed for my faithful prayers to Israel all my Christian life, tormented by the KKK, where I worked all those years.
Amazing. But Chuck, the point I wanted to make, though, was that God had mercy on you when you didn't deserve it. He had mercy on me when I didn't deserve it, when I was shooting heroin and using LSD and living a vile, unclean life and even stealing money from my own father, full of rebellion, pride. That's when He brought me to Himself. Romans 5, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So the first thing is you have to remember it's a matter of the mercy of God. A Muslim terrorist doesn't deserve it. A secular Muslim doesn't deserve it. A religious Jew doesn't deserve it. A practicing Jewish homosexual doesn't deserve it. Someone raised in a Christian home doesn't deserve it. We all fall short. We've all sinned. We all need mercy. That's the first thing. The second thing is if you had two sons and God said to you He was going to bless both of those sons, but one son got further away from you and the other stayed closer, wouldn't you still pray for that other son and care for that other son and welcome them if they came back? Because that's how it is.
I can't speak to that, Dr. Brown. I don't have any children.
Okay, but perhaps you could imagine that, because in that sense, you know, the two sons of Abraham, Ishmael and Isaac. He has other children later with Keturah, but the two main offspring that are followed in Scripture were both blessed, Ishmael and Isaac. God wants to bless Ishmael. And remember what happened in Acts, the end of the 7th chapter, beginning of the 8th chapter. Stephen is stoned to death, right?
Yeah.
A lot of this is because of the provocation of Paul. And he says, Lord, don't hold this sin against them. And then he is stoned to death. And it says that Saul was there. He was holding the clothes of the people that were stoning him. Obviously, they had some extra garments on, and they wanted to be unencumbered. And
exactly.
And not long after that, Saul himself, the arch persecutor, comes to faith. I believe the early church did exactly what Jesus taught. Pray for those who persecute you. And look at what happened. Paul becomes one of the key figures in world history. There are people like Waleed Shubat. There are many who were hostile. A friend of mine over in Europe has been meeting former Taliban, former radical Muslims from Gaza, former radical Muslims from Iran, who've all come to faith in Jesus. And think of this, the more that come to faith in Jesus, the better it is for Israel and the better it is for the world. So I would just, I would encourage you to ask God for his heart supernaturally for the Muslim world, the Arab world. It doesn't mean you condone the terrorism. Everyone is appalled by that. Much of the Muslim world is appalled by that. So I'd encourage you to ask for his heart supernaturally for the Arab world, also loved by God. Jesus died for them. Why is it that God can love them and we can't? And remember, to this day, God's helping Israel remains merciful because the Jewish people don't deserve it to this day. It remains the mercy of God. So I really pray that God would touch your heart with these things. Thank you for being candid, and may you continue to use your prayers. How interesting. November, December, that was my time of surrender. November, December, 71, just like Chuck. Thank you for the call, sir. I really do appreciate it. Joey, let's just go to a couple of audio clips. Let's go to clip number 13. This is President Carter, former President Carter, speaking at a gathering of ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America. And he is, ISNA in the past was found guilty of channeling funds to Hamas, which got them in some hot water. Of course, they would say that they don't side with terrorism, but listen to President Carter's remarks.
And particularly, I think those who are deeply religious, like all of you, and like I happen to be, I'll be teaching my Sunday school class, my Bible lesson tomorrow morning when I get home late tonight. And I hope that all of you will use the principles of Allah and our God to bring peace and justice to all. Thank you very much.
Now, I'm sure that you could find many Quranic and Islamic teachings that are peaceful, that are loving, that speak in gracious terms and reconciling terms. The problem is that there are many other teachings in the Quran and in Muslim tradition that speak in very different ways, with nothing categorically saying this was just for a certain period of time. In other words, the children of Israel taking the promised land, driving out the Canaanites, and God waited 400 years to drive them out until the wickedness of the Amorites, the Canaanites, was so severe that they deserved being dealt with. But that happened one time with a specific purpose, and we don't find in the New Testament that we're to go driving people out of lands to save them, convert them by the edge of the sword. No, God forbid. The Quran, however, in Islamic teaching, can be used to support aggressive jihad and war against the unbelievers. So there are some really distinct differences there. When President Carter speaks to Muslims and speaks about our God, does that mean that salvation does not come only through Jesus? Oh, and John Kerry weighs in too. We'll listen to him in a little while, but also want to play some clips for you. I think we've got time for a couple of these. A YouTube video entitled "A Message to President Obama" from a former Muslim who goes by the name of Brother Rashid. We'll play those for you as well. And be sure to visit the website, AskDrBrown.org, and just click on latest articles for two very relevant articles. And again, if you're in Des Moines, Iowa, listen to me right now. I'm coming your way. God willing, be with you Saturday. Meet and greet 11 to 1, then preaching Sunday morning at 10 and Sunday night at 6. And the specific reason I'm coming to Des Moines is to be with all you, our listeners. That's right.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The real face of Islam is not what we saw yesterday.
Speaking of the tragic beheading of American journalist Stephen Sotloff, let's listen a little bit more to Secretary of State John Kerry, if you didn't recognize the voice, clip number 26.
The face of Islam is not the butchers who killed Stephen Sotloff. That's ISIL. The face of Islam is not the nihilists who know only how to destroy, not to build. It's not masked cowards whose actions are an ugly insult to the peaceful religion that they violate every single day with their barbarity and whose fundamental principles they insult with their actions.
Again, Muslims around the world are outraged over the actions of ISIS. However, there is much support for the crazed actions and aspects of Islam, and those violent aspects have often characterized Islamic history. Clip number 22, this is a YouTube clip, message to President Obama from a former Muslim who goes by the name of Brother Rashid. I want to listen to this and then tell you something interesting that happened in the news involving us.
Dear Mr. President, with all due respect, sir, I must tell you that you are wrong about ISIL. You said ISIL speaks for no religion. ISIL speaks for Islam. Allow me to correct you, Mr. President. ISIL is a Muslim organization. Its name stands for Islamic State. ISIL's 10,000 members are all Muslims. None of them are from any other religion. They come from different countries and have one common denominator, Islam. They are following Islam's prophet Muhammad in every detail. They imitate him by growing their beards, shaving their mustaches, and in the way they dress. They follow his command in the Hadith to differentiate themselves from the infidels by wearing their watches on the right instead of the left hand. They implement Sharia in every piece of land they conquer. They pray 5 times a day. They have called for a caliphate, which is a central doctrine in Sunni Islam, and they are willing to die for their religion. They are following the steps of Islam's prophet Muhammad to the letter.
Yeah, and sadly, there is much, again, in Quran and early and later Islamic tradition that does support these things. What does that mean? It means to me that we need to pray all the more for the Muslim world, and for those who say they're moderate Muslims, to bring them into the true faith, the faith of Jesus, the Messiah of Israel. All right, interesting story from Wisconsin. We didn't find out about it until it was too late to respond, but this is Mick Penzenstadler, Post Crescent Media. Anti-Islamic posts on an Appleton alderwoman's Facebook page prompted sharp criticism Tuesday from community members who called the sentiments hateful and dangerous. Kathy Spears, a member of the city council, is at the center of the response to two shared messages that listed terror attacks perpetrated by Muslims and questioned whether Islamic teachings are peaceful. But just to jump in, isn't that not a valid thing to do? Spears, who also serves as an Allegheny County supervisor, said his posts were not intended to offend anyone. Quote, I have a very open viewpoint, look at all kinds of content. Posting something doesn't mean that I approve of it. I'm throwing it out there for comment, even if I disagree with it totally. I'm open-minded and see posts from very conservative friends and very liberal friends on Facebook. One of the posts listed acts of violence ranging from the September 11th, 2000 attacks to the Boston Marathon bombing and other events like the USS Cole bombers were Muslims against the backdrop of mosques. The post originated from the Ask Dr. Brown page. In fact, it was specially designed for us. Michael O'Brown is a North Carolina-based conservative radio host and American Messianic Jew. Brown did not immediately return a phone call from Post Crescent Media on Tuesday. When we got back to them, it was too late. Part of the post included this message from Brown. Quote, I know that there are many Muslim leaders who denounce violent Islam, but can someone please explain why, quote, the religion of peace is so bloody? Why is Islamic terror so widespread without a worldwide equivalent in any other religion today? Anyway, it got Kathy Spears in trouble. Let's see. City officials rebuke Spears. Hannah reacted swiftly. Hang on. Let me find who Hannah is. Mayor Tim Hanna. Ooh, Mayor Tim Hanna. Look at that. Hannah reacted swiftly to the post on Tuesday, saying they had no place in Appleton, where officials have put an emphasis on inclusion in recent years. Her post and her post alone certainly doesn't reflect the views of the city or the council. I'm disappointed, given the context of all we've done to position ourselves as welcoming and inclusive. Imam Muhammad Abdelazim of the Islamic Center of Wisconsin, which falls in Spears District, said the post were out of character for the community. Quote, I've lived in Appleton for 12 years now and was surprised to hear about this. The atmosphere toward Islam is very peaceful and people have been very friendly. The solution for any problem or misunderstanding is discussion and education. And the best thing is to correct this information, sit together, have a discussion. The goal was to have a discussion. Hence the post. We listed factual things, raised a question for discussion, recognizing many Muslim leaders renounce this. And in the name of inclusion, the lady gets rebuked and they say, there's no place for this. There's no place for raising a serious issue for discussion if it offends someone in the name of inclusion. Is anybody surprised? By the way, just saw news that comedian Joan Rivers died at the age of 81. For many, that's very sad news that have followed her career or liked her career. Some very feisty pro-Israel comments in recent weeks. And of course, always controversy and inappropriate comments at other times. But she'll be missed by many, especially by her family, of course. And I hope that in her closing moments, something happened in her life and she came to know the Lord. The thing that I'm struck by was you never would have thought she was 81. You know, many, many surgeries that she had. It just reminds me that everybody, we're all going to die. Everybody's going to die one day unless Jesus comes in our lifetime. And the big question is, are we living a life that makes sense in the light of eternity? And are we ready to meet the Lord ourselves? Friends, tomorrow you've got questions. We've got answers. Please do join us with your best questions. I'll be looking forward to answering them here on the Line of Fire. Remember to go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on latest article. Click on latest video. Click on latest blog to make sure that you are caught up with us. In fact, the latest blog will tie in with that news story that I just talked to you about. My bottom line today, God's love towards Jew and Gentile, God's love for Israel and Arabs, is not based on anyone's good works. It's based on his mercy and grace.